This is HPR episode 2517 entitled DIY CCTV Security System. It is hosted by Operat Zero R and is about 16 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, I go over my home CCTV setup.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Hacker Public Radio with your host, Operator. Today I'm going to be talking to you about the security system I have and set up. This uses ZoneMinder, an open source application, along with a couple of security cameras and some object recognition software. The actual system that performs the work is a media center box, so you may need to have a semi-beefy CPU for this, or a ridiculously expensive GPU, and I might go into some of that. First things first, the idea here is that I didn't want to purchase a Blinky box, right? Everybody has had some experience with, you know, seeing those in stores and things like that. I knew and did some looking around. There were some offerings in the cloud that did some of what I wanted to do, but it was never 100%, and not super interested in having all that information sent to the cloud. Google already knows everything about and more about myself and my wife, at least. So I wanted to build my own because I knew the limitations of that thing would not be what I wanted. So what I had ended up with is a Realink RLC410S. This has a on-premise or internal 16 gig thing that I think can be expanded. You might have to take it apart or something, but it's got 16 gigs on it. You can buy a non-16 gig for $65. The 16 gig one's $80. This is considered HD, 2560x1440. So it sounds like crazy if you're talking about it, but it's, you know, pretty standard. It's considered a bullet camera. They do have domes, things like that, for indoor. So what we have is a front camera facing the door, the house, the front door, and a rear facing the rear door and some of the other windows and things like that. There's a lot of stuff around online that'll tell you where to put them, where not to put them. You want to put them in plain sight. You want to put them about, 8 feet, 9 feet above. So, without of reach, but actually you want to keep them in sight and close enough to your target. So, at night, when the infrared turns on, you know it's not too far away. So, first thing I had to do was set up voice over IP, or not voice over IP, but a power over Ethernet setup. I got a Linksys 150. This one's a LGS116P, 16-port. I think the first 8 are power and the rest are standard. It's supposed to be gigabit. And the idea there is get all your wires set up, test it, make sure it actually works, then start wiring things. I have a fishing tape that I use for that. And there's also what helps is a tone generator, so you can kind of hunt the cables as they get lost inside the back of the wall. I did have some issues actually running these, but in general it's pretty standard, and you'll get better as you run more and more. I would advise against wireless, obviously, because these are high bandwidth environments with these giant resolution cameras and heavy frame rates, as high as 15 frames per second, even if 25, 30, any something around that range when they're first out of the box. So we end up clocking it down, which I'll go into later. The thing you want to start with is really called for Windows, if you have Windows and want to have a quick look at this, I would start with iSpy. It has some object recognition built into it, and it's pretty decent. It's all CPU based, not GPU based. All that. What I used is ZoneMinder, and ZoneMinder again is open source. So the cameras are plugged into the power of Ethernet switch. That goes to the media box, and we have two sources for the media box, and that goes to ZoneMinder. Now, when ZoneMinder creates an event, I've got zones set up, so we have zones for each distance, essentially. One is for near, one is for far. The far is obviously higher sensitivity, and the closer one is kind of normal sensitivity. And then we have a preclusion zone for the street, which is actually cars passing by. They say the best thing you can do is actually capture a license plate, and I might go over that if I end up building a manual profile for a stationary license plate reader for the nighttime and daytime. So the idea there is that kind of futz around with it at first, get the setup right, get the positioning right, kind of get a feel for what it looks like, and start getting into ZoneMinder and the zones and raising the sensitivity. And after you've got all that set up, then you can start getting into the yellow stuff, which is the dark net and object recognition. My experience, this board is probably 3, 4, 5 years old, and it takes about 10 seconds per image. Now, if you have like a 4 gig card, you can use YOLO with GPU processing and do some real-time craziness. If you have want to use Tiny YOLO, which haven't had the best luck with, you can actually get away with like a 2 gig card, they say. So the way it works is, when an event in ZoneMinder is closed, it actually picks a random 10 images out of the event. Now, that's an issue if there is motion that's actual legitimate motion, and in those frames, maybe that's a lot of motion. So for example, if someone's, you know, having a fight in the front yard, right, and it picks a random 10 images, that motion might not be part of something else, and you might not catch your target. But generally speaking, if there's motion within 10 frames of all of that or any of that motion, there's probably going to be an object at some point in time. So I opted out of capturing all the frames instead of just capturing the 10 random frames to be processed by the object recognition. So I filter out everything that's not a person, dog, cat, or car. There's a lot of objects within YOLO by default, and the future state would be to only configure it to load those profiles, and it would make the processing much faster, right? If you're only looking for person, dog, cat, car, then it's only going to have to look for that and significantly lower the speed. And that's about creating your own filters, essentially, or what they call them. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. So if an object detects it, we looked at to see if two Android phones are on the network, meaning that if my wife's phone or my phone is on the network, right, it won't notify us but every hour. So the idea there is, if we're both home and we're playing out in front of the yard with the kids, we're not going to get blown up with alerts and emails and flooded with every time you throw a ball, right? So that helps with that part of it. Well, the reason we have it throttled or even on at all when we're home is, for example, if we receive a package or maybe an in-law comes over or a relative comes over, and we generally will usually pick that up unless, you know, you go out on the side and then within 30 minutes you come back in and another event happens. So they're throttled to about 1 hour per hour we get an event. If nobody's home, the original event is actually sent, that YOLO detected. So there's also a percentage. So I think I have it set for like 60-75%, if not 60%, for each one of the definitions. And I've got a video in the show notes for what that kind of looks like. Other than that, there's a lot of really ugly bash code that I've got in the show notes that actually show how functionally this works. What I'll do is tell you about issues. So what a lot of people don't think is rain, things like spider webs across the infrared. And if a spider web gets cast across the camera, that's fine. But what happens is when the infrared turns on it lights up like a Christmas tree, and the slightest bit of wind causes motion because it's so close to the camera. So what I'll do is I'll have a little bit of bug spray and actually use kind of some outdoor bug spray, and I use that to kind of keep that area free of different insects and webby, casty types of critters. Let's see, car lights, again, talk about preclusion, so that's probably a big help in sorting all that out. Full motion capture, I can do on the card about 16 or 6 hours per the 16 gigs, I want to say. In general, that's kind of what it covers, or more or less, because if it rains, or if you don't actually go outside, or depending. So I really want to say it's anywhere from 6 hours to the heavy end would be maybe 12, maybe a full day. And on the low end, if it's raining all day and you get flooded with events, you might even get as little as 2 hours if it's capturing 2 hours straight. But in general, it seems like it's about 6 hours. And I've missed out on some things, like different things in the yard that I wanted to capture the full motion for. So I think it's around 60 gigs with the full frame rate and all that. And I might do some tweaking with that. Another thing you'll experience is smearing, and or you may not experience. And the idea there is that you set the max frame rate lower to what's in ZoneMinder, and that can help. There's also, you can switch between FFmpeg and using remote. And those are similar, but from what I understand, different as the way they work. I was more successful with the remote, but I had quite a few errors, constant errors inside of ZoneMinder about syncing issues and things like that, mainly because I'm trying to capture too many frames per second, basically, I think. In systemd, I'm kind of not getting the messages that are coming out of my batch script for whatever reason. Another thing I'll mention is at nighttime, the frame rate is obviously slower, so it can have a longer exposure time, so you can actually get a better image. But if the image is moving, or if the object is moving, it's pretty hard for Yellow to detect what that object is. So at night, you might get a person detected as a dog, or you might get a stationary object detected as a dog if it's sitting there at night. Mainly the blurring is what really breaks the whole object recognition stuff. Let's see. I would start with another tips I would say is start with low settings for the sensitivity, and again start raising it in each zone until it starts tripping. And you want to do this over time, right? So you want to raise the sensitivity, let it rain, check it out, see how it goes, let it go overnight through an overnight setting. So honestly, the best time to experiment with this stuff is kind of before it rains, or even when it's raining, that helps. Or also during a really bright day where there's lots of shadows being cast. Excuse me on that stuff. Man, my light just went out. Another thing I'll say is, I think that's pretty much set. I'll do overload, ignore frame counts. So, for example, if there's only 2 frames of motion, then I'll kick that out. Meaning that if someone is walking towards your house, or if the targets that I'm looking for are probably going to contain more than 5 frames, 10 frames, right? So I think I have the throttle set to 10 frames, and I also have it drop off the beginning and end of the event. So traditionally, I think it captures the first and last 20 frames. I might turn that back on now that I'm only capturing 10 random frames, but that's going to sit in the pool of the 10 random frames for the object recognition, and one of those frames, 10 of those frames, could potentially be the 40 that are originally captured before and after. But it's really a preference. But the overload ignore frame count is pretty significant. And also there's the alarm frame count that you want to kind of take a look at too. There's for the preclusion zones, you also want to raise that. So if it's a default of 10, then it's probably going to be more than 10 frames for the preclusion zone. So for example, a car drives by, that's a lot more than 10 frames. So it might be up to 20 frames or even more for that type of lighting event to cause motion. Other than that, we're pretty happy with what we got. We pick up all the delivery people. We'll pick up people driving the driveway and in-laws and stuff. But I guess the next part of the project will be to somehow capture the street. We live on a single street, so I would like to somehow capture both directions, which that would require having two more cameras, which would significantly double the amount of bandwidth, potentially. But not necessarily if it's capturing a stationary object and only trying to do license plate and read license plates. So that's the predicament there, is that the license plate information is pretty important, but to capture it, you'd want to have a camera going both directions, or at least if you have it in one direction, you would have to know that the target is going to be within that range and either drive to it or drive past it to be able to connect or to be able to pull a license plate off of that. So there's some logic issues I'm working through for the license plate stuff that I may or may not pull the trigger on, because honestly, we haven't had any issues, knock on wood, within our neighborhood here. So anyways, I haven't recorded an episode in a while, and I've got a few down the pipe. And if you have any ideas or questions, let me know, and feel free to contribute. I'm hopefully going to start having some more interview type of setups and get some kind of co-hosts on the deal and get some conversations going that are a little bit less boring than me just babbling on about stuff for hours at a time, right?
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.